It's the Football League podcast, dressing up for World Book Day as the little pod that could. Coming up, Burnley crisis as Clarets concede an actual league goal. A bad week for managers whose first names begin with S as Scott and Sean say sayonara. Millwall's Liam Roberts tribute, seriously. And like any self-respecting TV viewer in the 2010s, Blackburn and Coventry hoped not to catch the X Factor. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we're back with you for another week. It's Matt Davis Adams, Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin here to talk all things EFL. How are you doing, Clarky?
I'm all right, yeah. World Book Day, obviously, big event in the house this morning. Sonic the Hedgehog and Little Miss Sunshine left not so long ago. Yeah, looking good.
Yeah, I had an enormous crocodile. I don't know about you, Sam, and maybe you can put some meat on the bones to this because I'm not sure why, but at my son's school, every child has to take a potato in today. I mean...
What?
Do they not have sufficient supplies of root vegetables? Is it just an East Midlands thing? Is that anything that's afflicted you today?
It hasn't, no. I am completely useless when it comes to this. I couldn't make out what anyone was on the way to school, much to my boy's amusement. I had a room on the broom, and I had, I don't know if you've seen these books, but it's basically when I grow up, I want to play for insert team. So my oldest is... in a Bournemouth kit. Nice. And the only Bournemouth player I can think with fair hair is Alan Connell. So my son is in a school in Southwest London dressed as Alan Connell today.
Okay.
Gotta hurt.
Remember Bournemouth him? Already Howe. There you go. Eddie Howe, that would have worked, wouldn't it?
Bournemouth and not QPR. That stings, mate.
Yeah, well, it's a family tie. That's where my other half comes from. So the grandparents are down there, and it was a friend who duly sent us a Cherries kit in the post a couple of weeks ago so he could go as Oscar from the aforementioned book.
Lovely stuff. All right, we've got loads to get through today. Before we start, though, let me remind you that our partners Quinbet have an offer for you where you can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. We are going to start today by looking back at some of the big action in midweek. And Burnley moved to within a couple of points of the automatic promotion places despite conceding their first league goal of the year as they won 2-1 against Cardiff in South Wales. The thing that bugged me about this, Clarkie, was the goal from Yusuf Salic was so mediocre, just a header. Like, you wanted it to be an overhead kick from like 45 yards out that was going to break Burnley's streak, right? Like, oh, okay, fine. That's the goal you're conceding.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Look, they've been riding their luck a little bit, Burnley, I've got to say, in terms of like keeping this clean sheet record alive. So it was they were due this, I suppose. Yeah, it wasn't an amazing goal, but I've got to say, from a Cardiff point of view, on a relatively bleak night. I mean, no disgrace losing to Burnley, but they didn't play particularly well. Didn't start the game very well. It was a fairly nondescript first half performance. The display from Salak is promising, isn't it? I think he looks a real handful. Bowl accounts, Omar Rica, wanted him. It was his signing. And the club, reading between the lines, the club weren't sure and said, well, this one's on you, mate. Which is an interesting take. But he's now got 6 goals in 12 and hit the woodwork twice as well. So, but you know, as I said, Burnley have definitely been giving up more chances lately. Well done to Salak. I think he's settled in lovely. What he's got to do, I think, is find a place for him and Callum Robinson in the team. Maybe play Robinson in a wider spot because he left him out of this game. And I think that's a little bit unfair, really, on Robinson, who's been their sort of go-to player for most of this season. So, get those two in the team for the next game. But, yeah, defeat for Cardiff, not great. But Burnley march on, don't they?
They do, yeah. We spoke last week about the potential of them catching Sheffield United. Cardiff are a place and 5 points above the relegation zone ahead of their game at Sunderland on Saturday. Like the Bluebirds, Hull City also got a 5-point buffer from the drop zone after a fuss-free win over Plymouth, who are 6 points from safety. Uh-oh, Sam, is this the post-Etihad Salford-style hangover? Miron Muzlic not very happy. The Championship is about fight. It's physical. It's duels. I think we showed it in an excellent way over the last couple of weeks. We didn't show it tonight. Always likely to be a tricky game, wasn't it, after their exhortations in Manchester, but a pretty poor performance from Argyle here.
Yeah, of course. And I think going into that game at Manchester City, you know, a lot of people would have been already thinking about the subsequent game because the magnitude of it in the league, and as good as the performance was and getting the goal at the Etihad, yeah, it's a real blow to their survival hopes. And didn't have a shot, I don't think, until around about the 79th, 80th minute, which is
not on target in the game, not a single one.
Very in keeping with a lot of their performances away from home. It's not the first time we've said this. So I presume tired legs did play a part here. Hull were patient and took their opportunities when they came. I think my big question mark about Ruben Sellers' side has been where the goal is going to come from. You know, they weren't able to add that probably guarantee of goals in the window. So I think good to see Pedro up there as a focal point, found a place for Joseph on the left-hand side. That gives you a little bit more ammunition, and Kamara getting one of the goals. I think that is his first goal since a double against Leeds in that thrilling 3-3. So massive win for them and giving themselves an opportunity. And again, Argyle are going to have to hope to pull a few rabbits out of that at Highland Park.
Yeah, first win of 2025 at home, isn't it, for Hull? Gilhart deserves a mention as well. They sort of moves him from the flank into more of a number 10 position, gets himself a poacher's finish. I think he's a bit of a goal scorer, isn't he, Gilhart? I think sometimes when he plays wide, not close enough to the goal. So that's probably a good little tweak. But yeah, I mean, yeah, this was a comfortable win, wasn't it? Even though the second goal was definitely offside.
Yeah, by an awful long way. Elsewhere, Zach Viner's first goal for nearly 2 years set Bristol City on their way to victory at Millwall. The Robins eventually tamed the Lions 2-0. Only goal difference now, keeping them out of the playoff places. We'll start with Bristol City, Clarkie, because they won the game. Whose playoff place are they most likely to take, and why is it West Brom?
I don't know. Who's in there at the minute? Oh, Coventry and West Brom, aren't they? I don't know if they are going to overtake Coventry and West Brom. I do think they're probably the most worthy, if I'm honest. But Bristol City are in good nick, aren't they? Three wins and a draw in the last four. This ended a run of sort of, I think, nine games without a win on the road. So that's really lifted them, no doubt. I think some of their performances have been really good, even though they haven't been winning away from home. So, yeah, this was needed. What sort of made me laugh here, or the irony of it, is that they Millwalled Millwall. They scored a set piece goal. The set piece, by the way, if you look at the goal that Viner scores, it is a great example of why so many coaches have zonal marking, because they went man to man and basically the 6 yard box was empty. He had someone on the post, I think someone in front of the keeper, and that was it. And that's the problem. If you lose your man, that 6 yard box is empty. They flashed the ball across the face of goal and Viner scores. So that was interesting. And of course, the other goal was a little bit Millwall as well. A long goal kick flicked on by Harry Cornick, who needed a goal. And then he gets onto the end of the return. Well, a rebound, doesn't he? With a keeper, does pretty poorly, pushes it straight out to him. So yeah, good for Cornick. Good for Bristol City. They're looking like they can push for playoffs, but I still think they'll fall short.
Tough run coming.
Sorry, Matt, go on.
I was going to say, Sam, tough run coming up for them, isn't it? They've got Hull this weekend, but then Sheffield United, Norwich, Burnley, still got to play Watford as well. I mean, you look at that one of two ways, don't you? Either it's a good chance to take points off teams around you, or you'd rather be playing somebody with nothing to play for.
Yeah, well, they've surprised me already, because I'd written them off after that home defeat against Swansea about 3 weeks ago. So to get, I think, 10 points from the subsequent 12 available is incredible going. I noted that Pring on the left-hand side has been missing for a large chunk, and two assists in back-to-back games. So I think he's really important for them on the left-hand side. And as Clarkie says, Cornick getting that elusive first goal of the season. I don't know if he, having been at Ashton Gate recently, is a bit of a figure of fun, or he is someone that the supporters are craving, given a little bit more game time. Well, hopefully for his sake, it's the latter, and that he can contribute in the time that remains. Interestingly, Mometi, who hasn't been on song, should I suggest, from around about that game that I mentioned, left out of this one. So just a slightly different setup for Liam Manning, probably naturally away from home, being a little bit more conservative. And as Clarkie says, doing a little bit of a job on the Lions.
Millwall, some supporters paying tribute to Liam Roberts with a minute's applause in the 9th minute. I mean, he was actually sent off in the 8th minute on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, the FA looking to extend his ban for that atrocious challenge on Jean-Philippe Mateta.
What do you think about that?
About the applause?
What about the applause and the extended ban? I mean, I'm interested to hear what you boys think, because I don't think it should be an extended ban, I've got to say. I think it was a red, very dangerous tackle, but I don't think it. I think it's been blown up a bit. And the minutes applause is embarrassing, isn't it? I mean, that's shocking for Millwall fans. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess, Sam, the argument would be, well, my argument would be, if, say, Mateta can't play again for the rest of the season, then maybe to level things out a bit, you do extend the ban a bit. But it's not like it was a deliberate, malicious act. I don't think he's trying to end Mateta's career or kick his head off or anything, is he? He's just made a poor decision in a split second.
No, I don't think so. I think that, as you guys said, it was a terrible-looking challenge. I don't think there was any intent there. Funnily enough, I was thinking about it this morning. I was on the receiving end of something, I was going to say similar. I mean, it was a lot lower, the contact. But I remember Paddy Kenny charging out at me once upon a time when he was, I think, playing for Bury, and he caught me in the chest. I think, you know, there's that where goalkeepers want to kind of protect themselves and they're very, very physical when they come out for balls. He's just mistimed this one. And it looked horrific. But I don't enjoy all the noise subsequently from all sides. Just don't deem it necessary. I think that's the nature of the beast, what the game's become. It gets discussed over and over. I think, you know, the 3-game ban should be sufficient, and we should be pleased and relieved that the injury's not worse for Mateta. I don't think it was particularly helpful, the interview with Steve Parrish, but I think that he's emotional. I think that he's angry, and I think it's their prized asset as well in Mateta, which adds to the feeling, I suppose, because he, as you could argue, Palace's most important player. So I could understand it in the heat of the moment, but, you know, on reflection, it probably wasn't the wisest thing, because it's just gathered such pace. So yeah, I'd kind of like it to go away.
Well, we shall see about that. Let's talk about League One next. And shortly we'll get to Sam's trip to Adams Park in midweek. But first of all, the leaders Birmingham suffered a first League One defeat in 19 games as playoff chasing Bolton came from behind to beat them at the Tough Sheet Community Stadium. Clarkie, we spoke about Birmingham's injuries. We spoke about them probably not impacting on them in the long run. This is more about what it does for Stephen Schumacher and Bolton players and supporters' belief in his project, if you like, I guess.
Yeah, brilliant night for Bolton Wanderers. Yeah, look, they deserved the win, first and foremost. Birmingham didn't really show up. It was a poor performance by their high standards. But I think Bolton deserved credit. In a way, it was a tale of two goal kicks. I don't know if you saw the goals, but, you know, one of them is a short one where they play through the lines, up the pitch, beautifully to score through John McAtee. I think that was the equaliser. And then the one to seal the game was a long goal kick flicked on. And then it was flicked on by Collins, who then gets the ball back from Randall and scores the goal. So, yeah, that was really positive from Bolton. I thought it was a terrific performance. The wing-backs were amazing in the game. Dacres Cogley, we know, is a really good player getting forward, but Jordi Osse Tutu was a bit of a star in this game. 9 dribbles, fouled, wait for it, 9 times in this match, which is incredible. Taylor Gardner-Hickman, who was filling in at right back, got hooked after 56 minutes, which was a sign of how he was getting tormented. Good to see Carlos Mendes-Gomez get his first start in a long, long time as well in the league. So, yeah, really, really good night for Bolton. They're gathering a bit of pace. And with sort of some of the teams above, like Huddersfield and Stockport wobbling, all of a sudden you're thinking Bolton have got a sniff at the playoffs, and they might be the team that go into the playoffs in the best form. So, yeah, well played, Bolton.
Yeah, League One, where it's at in terms of the promotion race. Sam, you were at Adams Park on Tuesday night to see Wickham's latest victory. They beat Burton by 2-0. I know you want to pour some love over Richard Kone, but you must have been pleased to have been there to witness live one of the all-time great EFL own goals.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. Yeah, probably on reflection, Jack Armour, the unfortunate goal scorer of the Oggy, probably got to pass it to the side of the goal, haven't you? When there's a lot of people putting you under pressure and the game's moving fast, you just kind of don't want to put your goalkeeper in any kind of jeopardy. That said, I did say slightly after in the commentary, if he hooks that out of play, he probably gets a little bit of criticism because it was on to just pop it back to the goalkeeper and maybe recycle possession out the other side. So I understood his decision-making, but very, very comical. Couldn't say that Wickham didn't deserve the cushion of the second at that stage. They were the far and away the better side. And on the night, Kone, who you mentioned, and Udo were the real difference makers. And interestingly, that Mike Dodds has, you know, decided to put them both in together. Clarkie spoke about it on the previous podcast, Udo playing off the left, but he comes really narrow. It allowed Adam Reach to supply the width from left back, getting up and down like he was 21. Adam Reach, he had a really good game. I think it was his maiden start. But Udo and Kone very much afterwards kind of, I felt, if you put them in the Burton side, the outcome of the game could be different. And that is basically what talismanic front players, certainly one who's too good for the level, can do for a side in the third tier. Kone, it's the first time I've seen him live. He's a championship player now, and he could be better than that. Honestly, he has got absolutely everything, and it probably wasn't his best game, but he laid on the first for Udo, and the second one, obviously, he was the player chasing down Jack Armour. He's strong, got really good touch, he's quick, he's got good awareness, and he can score goals. I mean, he's the full package from what I've seen. So, incredible story. I very much doubt that he's going to be playing in League One next year. So, hopefully, for the Chair boys, they get promoted and he can have a crack of it in Wickham colours. They were really impressive. And just, yeah, on Burton, John Daddy Bavarsson, we've mentioned on the pod, and Burrell, the other striker, neither of them have been fit. Burrell fit enough to come off the bench. It makes such a difference when the ball just keeps coming straight back and you haven't got that presence. So that was a big difference maker. And Wickham, just the whole look of the team. Combative, strong centre-halves, beautiful balance in the midfield. Scowen, Leahy, my man of the match, and Humphreys on loan from Ipswich is an absolute dream in the third tier. Lovely technician. They are the real deal. So Wrexham got a hell of a battle on their hands because they are a seriously good side who aren't going anywhere.
Quickly on Kone, Joe Jacobson said to me on the radio a few weeks ago, he thinks Kone's Premier League. He thinks he will end up there. So, and I sort of almost was taken aback when he said it. But, you know, you've reaffirmed it, really. So
I think when you see someone with the raw attributes, kind of the pace and the goal-scoring ability, that's one thing. But seeing him in the flesh and seeing how he positioned himself, seeing his ability to link the play. I mean, every time the ball went forward for Burton, it was pretty much coming straight back. Every time it went into Burton's defensive half, he won a foul, got hold of it, or won a throw-in. You know, and for me, when I got more experience, you don't recognise how important that is for your team. How important. And he was just formidable, I thought, in, again, a game where he didn't score. He went off after about 70 minutes because his race was run, because he's missed a bit of football recently. But yeah, he really understands the position and he's got more than that. He looked incredibly gifted, aerially and on the deck. Really good player.
All right, well, they're 2 points ahead of third place Wrexham after they won at Huddersfield thanks to Stephen Fletcher's seventh goal of the season. Headlines from League Two were Bradford earning a 10th straight home win, setting a club record, whilst Notts and Wimbledon lost at Walsall and drew at Carlisle. Next today, we're going to do our weekly Managers What Got Sacked This Week section. And we'll start with Sean Maloney, just over 2 years at the helm of Wigan Athletic, gone after a run of one win in seven, culminating in defeat to Reading. Feels a bit harsh to me, this, Clarkie. Club legend, not going up, not going down. Not really sure why this one's happened. Obviously, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Were you surprised or am I being too sentimental?
I was surprised, yeah. Look, they're not very exciting, but he hasn't got that much to work with. He's got a lot of young players there. Not the biggest of budgets. James McLean waded in. I don't know if you saw this. Obviously, Wrexham, but a mate of Maloney's from his Wigan days, sort of saying quite a sarcastic post on Instagram, something along the lines of expecting a champagne lifestyle on a lemonade budget was his sort of payoff line towards Wigan. And yeah, look, he lost his best player, didn't he, Asgard, to Luton. As soon as they get anyone decent, they do sell them. I think what happened here really is the lack of goals, particularly at home. They are the joint low scorers in the league, along with Stevenage. Definitely the lowest home scorers, averaging under a goal a game at home. And this is the issue. I'm sure the board members watch games home and away. I'm sure they do. But most fans only see the home games, and they've won 5 of 17 at home. They've lost 8. Away from home, pretty solid, like really hard to beat. I think they've only lost 6 of 17 on the road, so it's hardly been terrible. But if you don't do it at home, the grumbles are going to start and people are going to get a bit twitchy, and I think that's what's happened here. So yeah, I feel sorry for Sean Maloney. As a club legend, considering the budget and the limitations, I think he deserved maybe a little bit more time.
Yeah, when I saw them, just distinct lack of creativity. Asgard was the best player by a distance, and they have moved to try and replace him in the window with Dale, who's obviously played championship level, I think, last couple of seasons, and Ronan Darcy, who was a standout at Crawley last season. But adding that goal threat, that real goal threat, has not happened readily for Sean Maloney. And, you know, watching them pre-Christmas, they needed 2 strikers at least to give them a little bit more of a threat, because I think you could argue they might have the best goalkeeper in the division. They might have 2 of the best centre halves, certainly in terms of a partnership, Kerr and Ameson. You've got Carragher as well waiting in the wings, who I think has shown himself to be a talented player as well. So they've got a really good structure to the side, but they were never, I was going to say they were never allowed to play without the handbrake on. I think that was partly probably due to the tools that he had at his disposal, Sean Maloney, rather than his want to play a better style. So we'll see where they go now. A shame for him, because, yeah, I think that in his early months in the job, it looked like he certainly had potential, and he inherited a really difficult job in the aftermath of some real problem years there.
Yeah, it's a job in the Northwest, so Ryan Lowe is odds-on favourite to get it. It'll probably be announced as soon as I hit publish on this podcast. Next one, less of a surprise. Scott Lindsay, been future endeavoured by MK Dons. He'd overseen a run of 11 defeats in 16 matches. Sam, this is an absolute calamity for him, isn't it?
It's for us as well, because we were saying they were going to get promoted about 2 months ago. So, yeah, I don't think, you know, anyone who follows the EFL wouldn't have initially thought this was a beautiful fit, great fit. I mean, they absolutely tore them to shreds, didn't they, last year, Crawley, with Scott Lindsay at the helm. And he inherited a job at a club where they want to have the ball over anything else, and they want to be really possession heavy. He recruited some of the lads that he had in that Crawley side. Latterly, Orsi came in as well, didn't he, from Burton. So reunited with him, and he's just not been able to translate it to, I suppose, a club where the expectation is greater to be successful. The home record, really poor. I think probably not had enough goals at centre forward in the forward positions. I think latterly that has absolutely been the case in the last few games. I think 3 shutouts in a row. But I don't think there's any doubt that Scott Lindsay's a really talented coach. It's just a real head scratcher as to why he hasn't been able to find consistency. Maybe that squad at MK Dons still needs a little bit more surgery to make them competitive under the new coach.
And who that might be, Clarkie, we don't know at the moment. Dean Lewington, kind of sidelined a little bit by Lindsay after wanting to get involved. I think he'd been spending some time at Bristol City watching coaching sessions. Obviously, he's the MK Dons legend, but recently taken over, or not too long ago, club taken over. Stinks of Wayne Rooney, this.
Do you think? Yeah, I mean, it could. Yeah, I don't think that'd be the right call. But yeah, they're mentally on the floor, aren't they? They can't believe it, because they know they're good players. They know that they're talented enough to get promotion, but they just keep losing. And I think it's just destroyed them. And when you play that brand of football, you've got to be confident. If you're edgy and you're expected to pass it through the lines and receive it in tight areas, it's a recipe for disaster. So whoever comes in has got to really work hard on lifting the players, in my opinion. two of the names linked. Luke Williams is the stylistic fit, hasn't he? Obviously just lost his job at Swansea, did well at Notts County. Ian Everett is an interesting one. He might be a good blend, plays good football, but he's also obviously hard as nails, and will get stuck into the players. It's just whether that job's attractive enough maybe for Ian Everett, because Bolton, you know, big club, big crowds. It's a bit different at MK. So let's see.
Yeah, Ben Gladwin's in charge, I think, for this weekend, who followed Scott Lindsay from Swindon to Crawley. He has been coaching, I think, or, you know, getting involved in the sessions for a couple of years now as he looks to make that transition. And I interviewed him a couple of years ago and we potentially spent about 10 minutes speaking about coffee because he had a very swish coffee machine behind him. So I know he's a big fan of that. He's a big fan of boots as well. I remember we discussed boots. He's a lover of footwear and covered in tattoos. I can't tell you anything else about him, but he absolutely had a desire to go into coaching. And given that he's been schooled under Scott Lindsay, there's probably an old relationship with Luke Williams somewhere back in the past as well, maybe at Swindon, if memory serves. He wouldn't be the worst person, I think, to maybe be a part of the new MK Dons now that Scott Lindsay's departed, and maybe him with Luke and another maybe a good fit. But Ian Everett as well, on the face of it, as Clarkey says, if you're talking about someone who wants to dictate possession style-wise, another one which makes a lot of sense.
Big job for whoever takes it. All right, next today, we're going to preview the weekend's action. And how about this for a narrative-laden affair? Mark Robbins returns to Coventry with his Stoke team underwhelming and his old club flying sky blue high under his replacement, Frank Lampard, who, Adrian, can do no wrong. Won the last four, eight of the last nine. Haven't been in the Premier League since 2001. Would it be a surprise if they didn't make the playoffs now?
Yeah, it would surprise me if they didn't finish in the top six. Yeah, they're absolutely flying. That eighth league win in nine is the best sequence of victories in 55 years for Coventry. It's remarkable, really. I worked on the game at Oxford, 3-2 win, really exciting game. And it wasn't perfect. They didn't defend amazingly well. They kind of had to grind it out in a lot of respects. It was quite scrappy at times, but they've got a lot of talent. And you could see that. That really shone through in the game. Mason Clark impressed me massively coming in off the left. He looks championship. You know, he looks top-end championship now. Sakamoto scored a worldy volley, produced a great cross for the goal for Radoni as well. He's a class player, really good winger. Because what you get with Sakamoto is graft as well as end product. You can rely on him, and I think that he'll stick with him now. The blow is that Radoni will miss this game. He dislocated his shoulder scoring the goal. So we'll see. But yeah, Stoke will know that they're up against a very good team, a team that are brilliant in the air. I don't know if you saw this stat. They've scored 17 headed goals this season, which is the most by eight in the Championship. It's the most headed goals in the top five European leagues. It's remarkable. They put great balls into the box and they've got players that get on the end of it. So, but Mark Robbins will know all this. I sincerely hope he gets an amazing reception. I'm sure he will ahead of kickoff. But if you look at the form book, the way Coventry are playing, especially the forwards, Coventry should definitely win. Just a word on Hadji Wright. He looked really rusty when he came off the bench. Doesn't look ready for a start to me. So I think it could be a case of bedding him in slowly over the coming weeks. But yeah, Cov are looking good.
Can't say the same for Stoke. Sam, Mark Robbins' league record, played 10, won 2, drawn 4, lost 4. I mean, they'll limp over the line, won't they? 5 points above the drop zone. And then is he going to have a big churn of players over the summer to try and stamp his authority on things and do what so many before him have failed to do?
Yeah, you would imagine so. I think that was the noise coming out of the camp last week, wasn't it? Yeah, you just have that sense that they're going to find enough points. The squad is a hell of a lot healthier going into the running. Too early to call it the running, clearly, but you catch my drift. Gallagher back, Manhoff, Wilmot's returned. I think Baker missed the last one through illness. Bocat, the fullback. So I think the squad gives them better options. Who gets deployed maybe with Alhamady or off Alhamady will be interesting ahead of this one. And looking at some of the statistics, I mean, Johansson has been one huge success of this season. Most saves per match, and that's with the second highest XG against. So where would they be without, you know, one of the best goalkeepers in the league? A team that don't score many goals either. Only Luton and Derby scored fewer against the sixth highest scorers in Coventry. So yeah, I completely concur with Clarkey. This is a really favourable game for Coventry, where you expect them to continue with their run, but with those players returning and also 7 games left against bottom half sides, they'll find a way, and they'll be my favourites to be dark horses next pre-season as they are every year.
Well, that is just one of two managerial reunions this weekend. Another one happening at Pride Park. One suspects that this one won't have quite the same cordiality likely on display in Coventry, as John Eustace takes his relegation-haunted derby to a Blackburn side now under the tutelage of Valerian Ismail. Derby, Adrian, 7 points from safety, 3 games, 3 defeats, no goals under John Eustace, 2 wins in their last 21. I mean, there could be 10 points from safety with 10 games to go at the end of this weekend. Mm-hmm. This is absolutely ginormous for them. At least he won't have to do much in terms of his scouting.
No. I mean, if anyone should know the weaknesses of this Blackburn squad, it is John Eustace, isn't it? So he'll know the strengths, so he should be able to plan for that, and he'll also know where the weak spots lie. So yeah, this might be the day he gets his first win, obviously at home to Blackburn. He'd be relieved about that. It's not Ewood Park. It would have been a hot reception, no doubt about it. It's just, who is going to score 2 goals in 10 matches since New Year's Day? Not scored at home since Boxing Day. Now, I was there against Leeds, which was like between Christmas and New Year. It feels like a lifetime ago. Haven't scored since. The fans haven't seen a goal in the league at home since. It's crazy. So yeah, that's the issue, and that's why they're adrift at the bottom. Can't believe it, really, given that they were in mid-table not so long ago. They're performing pretty well in between both boxes. They're not disgracing themselves. They're pretty good at Borough, but just don't have the punch. Don't have the pace really up front. Don't have a creative player that really sort of unlocks the door with moments of real quality. It's all about endeavour and organisation, and I don't think it's enough really to keep them up. Might be enough to win this game though, because Blackburn aren't in great nick.
No, I saw them a couple of weeks ago, Sam, at Swansea, and wasn't particularly impressed. That was before they appointed Valerian Ismail. Only out of the playoffs on goal difference, but I'm not sure any of us or many of our listeners are expecting them to make it given their current form.
No, I think, yeah, there is that kind of feeling, isn't there, that they may be the ones to just falter as they have done previously. Yeah, not, I suppose, much to go on with just one game at the helm. I thought a little bit passive maybe against Norwich, and set up as you would expect, the same way that John Eustace has had them playing previously with really good effect. 4-2-3-1, couple of new additions, Kakbo wide, Ribeiro at left back, who I think put the ball in for Vyman's equaliser. Hayden Carter coming back after, I think, 4 months out. Obviously a lot of expectation on his shoulders to become a really, you know, standout defender. So yeah, good to have him back. We'll see if they change maybe to a 3-4-3 in time. One thing that didn't surprise me, 3 changes on the hour, freshening things up, as was his way when he was at Barnsley previously, and getting the equaliser. But yeah, they come into this game, I think, a little bit short in firepower, a little bit short probably in the wide positions, a bit of a lack of consistency with those chaps that play on the flanks for them. And I think probably their detriment or their fall down at the tail end of this season will probably be to that lack of spark in the forward areas. But I think low margin game here, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if Blackburn were to nick it by a solitary goal.
In League One, two promotion chasers square off. Stockport County welcoming Charlton Athletic to Edgeley Park, just to place in 2 points between them in the playoff spots. They needed a late equaliser, though, did Stockport on Tuesday, to take a point at Northampton. Benoni Anderson, I think is how we're saying his name, Clarkie, Iceland under 21 international. He's hit the ground running, filling a Louis Barry shaped hole, but they're having something of a wobble. Lots of teams around them, maybe with a bit more momentum, and one of them's Charlton. So this is a huge game for the Hatters.
It's a really big game, yeah, in the context of the playoff race, no doubt about that. Yeah, it was a scrappy game against Northampton. I was speaking to Harry Simeon, who did the commentary on the game. He said it was terrible. I think Stockport had six shots and the Cobblers had four. So not a thriller. And interesting that Challoner made four subs on 56 minutes as well. He wasn't happy. But Benoni Anderson, Anderson is someone that we should definitely talk about. Three goals off the bench in the last two games. He's only made three sub appearances, full stop, since moving from Reykjavik, where he broke a record. You know, he scored the most goals in a single season for KR Reykjavik, 21 in 26. And he has scored two headed goals already. The one at Northampton was a majestic header, absolutely superb. And then when he got the brace to beat Blackpool, one was a really calm finish inside the box, passed it in the corner, and the second one was a header, the winner, really sort of good angled header from him. So he looks a serious prospect. This could be a magnificent piece of recruitment from Stockport County. He's only 19, but the manager, Challoner, has already said in training he's our best finisher by a mile. You think, you know, with this start, if it can be maintained, he's a player that will be worth a lot of money, maybe, in the coming years. So, yeah, they want to get more out of him yet before selling him, but he could be someone that goes on to a higher level. You mentioned Louis Barry, by the way. He's still scored more than double the amount of goals anyone else has at Stockport. He's had the most shots, and he's still had the most dribbles. So that hole is a big one, but maybe Anderson can start to fill it. They're a good squad. They can flip between a back four and a back five really easily. I think they are a top side in League One, even if they didn't show it in midweek. This would be a good game.
Yeah, and Nathan Jones really flying with Charlton at the minute. Sam, three wins on the spin, five from six. He's got Macaulay Gillespie getting late goals all over the shop. And I think we've kind of been waiting for that moment of him connecting with the Charlton supporters. And he did it in a very literal sense at Leighton Orient last weekend.
Yeah, I don't know what my reaction would have been had I been in the front row or maybe the second row. I think I'd have been...
Terror? Panic?
Petrified, as is often the case when it comes to Nathan Jones on this podcast. But yeah, he's been through the mill a little bit this season. Let's rewind to, what was it, November, when I watched him at Burton furiously, nervously chewing his fingernails as they scraped a 1-0 against 10 men, and they were dire. And after that night, it was a two wins in 10. They've since won 11 in 18. So it's not a turnaround I envisaged. So hats off to him. It's one of the stories at the moment in the EFL. Where they've positioned themselves based on, and nothing's changed really here. And I remember me and Clarkie being there in the late summer. It's still based on the strong defence and a strong structure. Lloyd Jones, someone I would point to, got injured against Birmingham, a home win. I think it was in the autumn time. He's been back for 17 games and they've had two defeats at Rotherham and at Birmingham. So he is a massive part of it. The wing-backs were Thierry Small and Kane Ramsey, and we spoke about Ramsey in glowing terms. Now they are forging a partnership down the right hand side. Small's playing wide, high, and Ramsey's getting rave reviews at right back. And I think it's that consistency in selection, especially across the back four. Edwards, Gillespie, Jones, Ramsey. They've certainly played the last five or six as a unit with Mannion in goal, and I think that's been the cornerstone of this success, really. So they're in a brilliant vein of form at the moment. There was massive pressure on Nathan Jones, and they've positioned themselves perfectly given that victory over Leighton Orient the other day, which was a massive game for those two clubs, and the start of both their seasons. You wouldn't have expected them being there. So yeah, big game, and expect it probably to be again low scoring. Stockport, you know, have the capability to be free scoring, but obviously going to have to look to others now to carry that Louis Barry burden.
In League Two, both AFC Wimbledon and Notts County suffered surprise defeats in midweek to see their automatic promotion chances take a hit. Dons lost at Morecambe. I watched Notts toil against Barrow at Meadow Lane. What do you think about Wimbledon then, Sam? They were in decent form, but it seems to have dropped off a bit, albeit they are generally pretty strong at home. And given how Notts played in midweek, they'll fancy their chances of getting back to winning ways here.
I think they will do. Yeah, there'll be a little bit of pressure on them, maybe for the first time in a while, given the home defeat to Bromley and obviously going up to Morecambe and losing. Did you see the pitch? I mean, there was barely a blade of grass on it. I mean, that, I think, has to have a little bit of an impact, and the travel midweek and stuff like that. It's difficult when you're playing against a team who will be more accustomed to that facility. And I think they played okay, Wimbledon, without creating good chances. And I think that will have been a frustration in quite a few games this season. They've had 9 defeats, Wimbledon, 7 of them by a goal to nil. And I think it's that difficulty against playing against a team who wants to give up the ball and wants to sit in. Wimbledon are much more happier and they have a much better chance of winning games when they're playing against teams who want to open up and have a bit of a go and have more of the ball. So Saturday, and if you look at the previous game, Salford, Bradford, off the top of my head, their recent victories will be teams that are a bit more accomplished with the ball. And Notts County certainly fall into that category. So, yeah, I would expect it to be, again, tight. But, you know, Wimbledon at home will fancy their chances. And he rolled the dice and changed a number of players, Johnny Jackson the other day, so he will welcome back in, I'm sure, the likes of Stevens, Brown, who's having to be managed because he's not played a lot of football over the last year or so, Bugill left out, Ogundeer as well, so there was a number of changes, and it's just that ability, I think, probably to break down, you know, really regimented defences, which has just been a little bit of a kryptonite for them this season. But don't see it being a problem this weekend. Need the victory, because having not picked up any points again in 2 winnable games, they've just slipped a little. So if automatic promotion is to be the destiny for them, yeah, it's a big one this weekend.
Yeah, I have won 5 of their last 6 at home, but no wins in 4 coming into this one. Clarkey, I was so disappointed with Notts on Tuesday. 75% of the ball they had against Barrow, but only mustered 4 shots on target. I'd watched their game against Tranmere from a few weeks back in preparation, and that was unconvincing too. 1 win in 5, like Wimbledon, maybe losing form at the wrong time.
Yeah, they've lost momentum, but they've also lost some key players, haven't they? And I think those 2 of those might return for this game, Jody Jones and David McGough. You know, they're the 2 stars, really, of the team, especially with no Dan Crowley anymore. So if they are fit, that will lift them, no doubt about that. There are 2 players I wanted to mention. George Abbott, 19-year-old on loan from Spurs. 4 goals, 4 assists. He starts every week. Scored and assisted at Fleetwood recently. I just think he's a really good all-round central midfielder. He can create, burst into the box, but he also works really hard and is a ball winner as well. So he's someone to keep your eye on. I think the Spurs fans feel he has a future at Tottenham. If he doesn't have a future at Tottenham, then it might be at a level higher than where Notts County are at the moment. And then the goalie, Alex Bass, I think, he's having a good season. Best save accuracy of all the first choice keepers in League Two. And according to Opta, he's prevented over 5 extra goals. So he's a real asset as well. So let's see. And on that Abbott, by the way, we didn't give it a mention at the time, but his goal of the month for January was unbelievable. I watched it back today from a corner at Accrington. One of those corners hit to the edge of the box and he's come onto it and spanked it on the volley, a cross goal into the far top corner. World class goal from George Abbott. So yeah, maybe he could be someone to watch that down there at Wimbledon at the weekend.
Yeah, big game for both of those sides. All right, nearly done for today. Let me remind you that our partners Quinbet have an offer where you can get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum 3 bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Predictions then. Last week, Sam got a perfect score, albeit bittersweet, because he'd backed his own team to lose by 2-1, QPR against Sheffield United, which is exactly what happened. Adrian and I just got the 1 point, Sam with 3. It's like the Premier League, isn't it? It's an absolute procession towards the title.
What's great about it is that Clarkie is Arsenal and you're Nottingham Forest, Matt. That's tremendous. Not a hope in hell's chance of doing anything Forest. Arsenal...
Yeah, just like Liverpool, Sam's getting all the luck, isn't he? All the little fine margins are going Sam's way, just like Liverpool.
Just like Arsenal, after years of trying, he thought this was the season where it might actually happen for the person who should have been favourite to do it. And there's plucky old little Matt coming up on the rails, the feel-good story of the season.
It's true. We're mirroring the top flight, which is a bit irritating when you do an EFL pod. Sam, 53, me, 40, Matt, 36. Didn't enjoy the derogatory comments from Sam in the WhatsApp group. A bit disrespectful. Let's bring him down, Matt.
Yeah, there's such a thing as a bad winner, is all I would say. Sam, seeing as you got a perfect score, you can go first this week. Watford versus Millwall is our championship game. What's going to happen?
2-0 Watford. Carbon copy of the Lions defeat in the week.
Wow, okay. What do you reckon, Clarky?
1-0.
Okay, I'm going to go for 1-1 in this one. Next up is Leighton Orient versus Northampton from League One. Adrian, who gets the points or do they get shared?
Orient, 1-0.
Okay, they could do with it, couldn't they? On a bit of a wobble at the moment. I will say that they will win this one 2-0. Sam, what about you?
Yeah, I'm with you too. I think it'd be a tight game, this. I wouldn't be surprised if Northampton got a point, but I can't go for it. 2-1.
Okay, and I shall go first on Barrow versus Accrington. Let's say that Barrow will make it back-to-back wins. I think this will be tight as well, so I'll say 2-1 here. What do you reckon, Sam?
I think slightly more on it for Accrington, so I'm going to go for the 0-1.
Wow, away win. Adrian finishes off.
Interesting. Yeah, let's meet in the middle. Let's go for a little one order.
Okay. And we will update you on that next week. Before we leave you, it's time for Tweet of the Week. This one comes from Brendan Wiredu. It's kind of riffing on the theme of last week, milestones that players celebrate. Brendan says, another milestone for me, 50 games as club captain, exclamation mark. What a result to go with it, exclamation mark. Support was top, exclamation mark. Appreciate you all, comma. Thank you. Love heart emoji, full stop, at FTFC. Grammatically, there's some errors with this, Sam, I think, so he loses a few points. But I'm enjoying this trend of footballers pointing out when they achieve a landmark in the game. Why not, I guess?
Yeah, and I'd imagine he hasn't had that picture on the left-hand side as we look mocked up. It must have been on the club Twitter or maybe in the programme. So he's not going to lose any respect from me there. I like it. I like the lads taking their craft seriously. I wasn't sure about last week's offering, but not a problem with this. And disappointed that he's only got 5 replies, of which 1 is spam. Deserved of more, I would suggest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Feel for him, don't you? You
know, looks like he pays for Twitter as well, Clarkie, because he's got a blue tick, but he's only got 3,500 followers. So that's an interesting little wrinkle to it.
He does pay for it. Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, I don't get that. Counting games as captain, I don't know. I mean, never happened for me. I mean, I was captain at Margate back in the day, maybe a few times for Stevenage. Never counted how many games I had, but I'm guessing he's been fed that information. The issue is on the grammar. He just needs a little bit of work on it. Too many exclamation marks. Don't know why there's a comma after appreciate you all. And obviously, with a thank you, love heart, it renders the full stop absolutely useless behind it, doesn't it? So he's just got to work on that side of his game.
If we're going to have a go at anyone, you're right. Let's have a go at the admin. Unnecessary. 50 games as club captain, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Well, it means a lot to him.
The appearance isn't enough.
But his pinned tweet is when he was named club captain. So it's obviously a big deal for him. I mean,
it's still a bit of graft to count them, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I'd
did
like
he
to
have
see
the armband? Did he have the armband for that Football League trophy game at Accrington? I'm not sure. I don't know if he started that, you know. I know it's only a little flick through transfer marked or the equivalent, but still, he's done well.
Captain of the COD Army, you'd want him sort of up in the top of the stands for a game he's suspended for, wouldn't you, for a feature called Captain Birdseye View or something like that. Something to workshop.
Come on, Matt. You're better than that. Come on.
No, I'm not. I'm really, really not. All right, we better get out of here quickly before I get myself in any more trouble. We shall be back with another show next week. Enjoy the football. If you're going to a game, if you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, we'd appreciate it too. But we'll be back next week. For now, though, it's goodbye.